Sports Radio 12. Sports Radio 1290 presents the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 2 hours of in-depth analysis, insight, and opinion into Canada's game. Now, here's Drew, Richard, and Ezra.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us online this morning at www.sportsradio1290.com, good morning, universe. And welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm the host of this fine program, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by my good friend Richard Pollock. Ezra is away this week on assignment. Producer Tim is getting us in and out of breaks like the expert that he is. And Michael Remus is on the other side of the glass operating the R desk. Welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We have a jam-packed 2 hours of hockey talk for you this Saturday morning. Coming up at 10:30 this morning from the Delaware County Daily Times, Anthony Sanfilippo will be joining us to discuss the Philadelphia Flyers. Coming up at 11:30 this morning from the Raleigh News and Observer out of Raleigh, North Carolina, Chip Alexander will be joining us to discuss the Carolina Hurricanes. But let's begin with last night's action on the ice. Very quickly. The big story from coming out of last night's games is the Calgary Flames' demolition of the Chicago Blackhawks on home ice. 7-2 final for the Flames over the Blackhawks last night. Richie, what did you see in that game?
I saw Marty Turco play an awful game. I saw Marty Turco show a lot more signs of the player he was 2 years ago as opposed to last year. And the problem is now with the Hawks is that they have a lot more holes than they did in years past, and they need to have solid goaltending. Not amazing goaltending, but solid goaltending. And last night, Marty Turco didn't give them that.
Is there a team in the NHL that needed that kind of boost from a good, you know, a good win on home ice against a high-quality opponent more than the Flames did?
No, I mean, I think the Flames did, absolutely. I mean, their goal, I think, is still to make the playoffs. I mean, probably in the 6th, 7th, 8th spot. That's their goal. They need to start winning games and getting some confidence and scoring goals. And I think you're absolutely right, Drew. That game last night was very important for their confidence. Now, the problem is that you play Detroit next. So can you maintain that momentum from this past game and move forward with it?
And that's a very good question. And it's interesting, the Hawks, and I mean, we're going to transition into our preview of Hockey Night in Canada that's coming up on CBC tonight. The Hawks play in the late game tonight at Vancouver in what a game that I think most people would think is quite possibly could be the Western Conference Finals.
Could be. Vancouver, I mean, my pick for the Stanley Cup, I think, will be there. The Hawks, I don't know. We have to see what's going to happen over the course of the season. Vancouver coming back off of an East Coast trip.
Right.
Coming back, Chicago playing first night, second night of a back-to-back with travel, obviously, in Calgary last night. So should be an interesting game. Vancouver's the better team this year. Last year, Chicago's a better team. Chicago to beat them, and the year before, the same thing. This year, Vancouver's a better team.
To me, Chicago looks they look tired. They've played more hockey than anybody else in the NHL. Going back to the playoffs last year, and then I mean even the Olympics before then, because most of their roster were on the respective Olympic teams, so they didn't get that 2 week break. They look tired. They don't have the same depth that they had last year, and their skill players are logging an absolute ton of time. I mean, Duncan Keith, I think, has had 6 or 7 games of over 30 minutes of ice time.
Which is weird, Drew, because the issue is the depth that they've lost. I mean, I understand they've lost Sopel and things like that, but to be honest, their top four is the same.
Yeah.
So why is he playing that much time?
You're talking about the defensive depth. Yeah. The defensive depth hasn't been hit as hard as the offensive depth.
You wonder why they're playing Keith so much. I mean, I looked at those stats, and I realized Campbell was injured for a while there, and Chalmerson got suspended. But even so, I mean, let's just keep this in check here.
Wonder if they're playing Keith because they know that the defensive liabilities or that they need him on the ice to make up for maybe Marty Turco's shakiness.
Maybe.
It's possible. Anyways, it'll be interesting to see the early game on Hockey Night in Canada. Really a game that I find it never really matters how good or, the standings, where these two teams are in the standings, they bring out the best in each other every single game, and that's the best matchup in hockey, and that's the Toronto Maple Leafs at the Montreal Canadiens.
You said it right, Drew. I mean, it doesn't matter if these teams are both terrible or both great. This is always an exciting game. The atmosphere is tremendous, no matter where it is. Toronto, Montreal, because you have Toronto fans in Montreal, Montreal fans in Toronto. This year, you have Carey Price, who right now is the Vezina Trophy winner.
Yeah.
And so, obviously, it's early, but Carey Price is a Vezina Trophy winner. You're going up against Toronto, who's been playing better lately, getting going a little bit more.
Winners of two in a row.
Two in a row, and the Habs look good.
Yeah.
This is going to be a fun game.
It always is. When these two teams meet on Hockey Night in Canada, it always is a fun game.
It's a good doubleheader tonight.
Exactly. It's a very good doubleheader. For me, from my perspective, with the snow on the ground now in Winnipeg, it's really hockey season.
Yeah.
There's something that, not that it's been lacking, but you're now into the heart of the season. You're about 18, 20 games into the season, about a quarter of the way through. it's now time to, you know, see the cream are going to rise to the top. You know, the wheat's going to separate from the shaft. Isn't that the expression as well?
I'll leave that one to you.
Okay, anyways.
I don't know.
But you're going to see the real good hockey is going to start now. And I think there's something about it. I'm excited for tonight's games myself.
Well, I mean, yeah, I agree with you, Drew. I mean, you're getting into now mid-November, late November. You're starting in, you know, you're close. Once you get into that December, you know, exactly right. The good teams start showing, the bad teams start fading off. And now I realize in the point system that we have,
everybody's
NHL,
always in it.
Everybody's always in it. But the good teams start, you know, separating themselves, and you can really start to see, you know, the groove that these teams get in. Like Calgary, you know, the put it this way, the expectations, the realistic and unrealistic expectations from the beginning of the season start to fade away.
Right.
And teams get to know what they have. And we, you know, we just saw our first trade this week, which we'll talk about later. We're going to start seeing more trades because once you see where you are, you know what you need, and the other teams know what they can give up if they want to start rebuilding.
Exactly right. Let's start with the really the topic that has had the hockey world abuzz all week long, and that is the emails that were released regarding Colin Campbell and his comments, his derogatory comments towards Mark Savard. Colin Campbell, of course, the director of hockey operations mm-hmm. for the NHL. He's the disciplinarian. He's the one who decides on suspensions. In the course of a labor dispute with an official who was released from his job, Colin Campbell, some emails were released, and a blogger went around and pieced together using the information that was not redacted in the emails.
He did. He used it off of the site called Cantley, which is like a free law database with cases.
Right. He found the cases. He pieced together the information, and he saw that Colin Campbell was sending derogatory emails regarding Mark Savard, mm-hmm. a player that he had briefly in New York.
Right.
Under any circumstances, can Colin Campbell be speaking honestly via email about a player and have it not affect his judgment when it comes to that player and disciplinary factions?
It's tough to separate the two, Drew. I mean, I can understand why people are unhappy with it. He can. I mean, it's certainly possible, but it's certainly possible the other way, too. And it's that element of doubt that creeps in that makes people think, well, his judgment is clouded. That's the concern. Now, going back to Colin Campbell and Mark Savard, it's funny because Colin Campbell had Mark Savard, you know, as a farmhand in New York before he was fired. And I believe the game he was fired, the day he was fired, we talked about this on show on Kick, John Muckler came up, and I think that was Savard's actually first NHL game. So maybe there was even more to that. He didn't really want him up on the big club. Mark Savard's reputation, though, could we quickly, as a youngster, and he'd probably tell you this, wasn't good. He whined, he complained, so Colin Campbell saying that is certainly, you know,
There's an element of truth in Colin Campbell's comments if this was 10 years ago.
Right.
But Mark Savard's reputation has changed dramatically since
then. Exactly, and you wonder if that's clouded his judgment. And that has to be on the table. You have to wonder, do I think personally that it did? No, because Colin Campbell has been making, the Mike Richards
hit on David Booth.
Hit.
Yeah.
I thought the Cook hit on Savard was worse, but Mike Richards didn't get anything. So, I mean, he's nothing if not consistent. Or
consistently bad at his job.
Right, I agree. I mean, Colin Campbell, to me, doesn't do a good job. He doesn't. I don't care about the guy. He could be a great guy. He doesn't do a good job disciplining in the National Hockey League. There's too many headshots, too many hits from behind. There's no consistency. Nobody knows the rules. But in terms of this, do I think it clouded his judgment? Probably not. But I understand why people are up in arms because of what
he did. It's the appearance of impropriety. I follow along the same lines with you. I don't think that Colin Campbell didn't suspend Matt Cook because Colin Campbell didn't like Mark Savard.
Matt Cook's no saint.
Matt Cook's no saint at all. I mean, I'm sure that Colin Campbell doesn't really like Matt Cook either. He's got a bad reputation. I just think that as the disciplinarian, you cannot even have the whiff that you're going to be, that you have a bias against one player or favor another player. I mean, then you factor in the fact he's complaining about Mark Savard and the actions as it relates to Colin Campbell's son, Gregory Campbell.
The son actually, it's a complaining about Savard. I mean, I realize he's going to go rail on about his son, and he's a hockey dad. But yeah, in terms
don't
of,
press send on the email.
Don't press send. The problem is, Drew, is the truth of the matter is if you were to go into the emails of lots of these NHL guys and the things that you'd read.
Of course. But you know what? Only one of those guys is responsible for handing out discipline in the NHL world. And that's Colin Campbell.
Sure, but you know, I mean, Gary Bettman probably has a role in some of those things, and you haven't seen any of Gary Bettman's emails to Colin Campbell.
You know what? But when it stinks in that you have Colin Campbell complaining about Mark Savard's on-ice actions as it relates to when Colin Campbell's son gets a penalty.
My point is not that it doesn't stink. My point is that it probably stinks a lot more with a bunch of other people. We just don't know about it.
That's fine. It doesn't. He's. But I mean, you're probably right about that. But it doesn't. That doesn't matter.
No, I agree.
As soon as you press send, it's in the public forum.
It is what it is.
You know, it's the same reason why you don't. You know, when you send out a text message of a picture, you shouldn't be sending. Mm-hmm. Don't be surprised when it becomes released to the public, Brett Favre. You know, don't send out that picture if you think that people aren't going to see it, because they will see it.
We're in the day and age. I mean, we're dealing with court. You know, the
court cases issues, and court cases.
So it's different than, you know, just the text. But I understand the analogy there. I mean, what happened? Also, can we talk a little bit about Drew? I know this is a little bit off topic, but let's talk a little bit about the relationships between the NHL and all these officials.
Yeah,
what's going on here?
Well, it's poisonous. It seems like the atmosphere is completely poisonous.
They all hate each other.
You have Carey Fraser, a longtime official and probably one of the most recognizable officials.
He was on Rod Black's show last week.
That's right, and he's hating on the NHL.
Hating on.
And this is a guy that the NHL, I mean, he's been around the league game for so long. This is a guy the NHL should be bringing under their wings to help nurture the next level of officials.
If you were to ask any hockey fan, which officials they know of, you know, which officials who they know. Tell me five officials who you know, you know, the names that you know.
Carey Fraser's up at the top.
Carey Fraser is one of the top five.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
Forget about just the hair, all the jokes, but he's recognizable. And they were talking about last week on Rod Black's show, you know, the relationship between officials and players and fans now. Nobody knows their names.
Right.
They're
anonymous.
They don't have identities.
Yeah.
They don't have reputations, except for maybe within the game, because nobody knows who they are. And I think there's a balance there.
Well, the other one, Andy Van Helman, he was released from his duty as director of officials unceremoniously. I mean, he got into some trouble. I can't remember exactly what the issue was, but he was released from that. I mean, it just seems like there's a poisonous atmosphere at NHL headquarters, and that's something that the NHL really needs to deal with.
Why haven't they?
Well, I guess they put their heads in the sand. I think that's their problem, is that they're not really, you know, really spending a lot on it. You know, before we go to break, the hockey world lost a great man yesterday, and it's important that we, you know, the tributes will be said by people who knew him better and knew him, and those tributes are well reversed. But on behalf of everybody at the Legal Curve Hockey Show, we have to send out our condolences to Pat Burns and his family. Three-time Jack Adams Trophy winner for Coach of the Year, passed away after a long, valiant fight against cancer. Really, just a quintessential hockey guy, you know, self-made hockey guy, and he did it with so many different teams that it's it was just a remarkable career. And you know, our condolences to the Burns family and everybody else associated that knew and loved Pat Burns. And the hockey world is a worse off place today without Pat Burns being here. When we come back, we're going to discuss the trade and Mike Richards calling out PK Subban. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's time to break down the first trade of the NHL season of any significance, that being the Calgary Flames-Carolina Hurricanes trade from earlier this week. And in case you missed it, going to Carolina was Brett Sutter, the son and nephew, respectively, of the coach and general manager of the Flames, and Ian White, who they acquired in the Dion Phaneuf deal earlier last year.
That deal really is looking like an insignificant move.
It looks like Calgary just was wanting to get rid of him at any cost at this point. The only problem is they re-signed Matt Stajan for huge money.
That's exactly right, Drew.
Yes. And then going back to Calgary was Tom Kostopoulos, a veteran sort of third, fourth line guy.
Because we know Calgary doesn't have enough of those players.
Well, and Anton Babchuk, another defenseman.
Yeah.
Really, the key to the trade is Ian White and Anton Babchuk. Richie, how do you think the deal breaks down? I mean, I think really in the NHL season, in the NHL world, you have to look at it in a sort of the realm of how it impacts on the salary cap.
You do. And this year, the Flames get a break. And then next year, the Flames take a little bit more money on because Kasopoulos is signed past this year. Now, it's funny. Babchuk seems like an older player than Ian White. Babchuk and Ian White are the same age.
Really?
So same age. Babchuk brings a certain element to Calgary. You know, his back end, he's got a howitzer, a slap shot from the back. There's a bigger guy. You know, he's maybe not as mobile, but he can certainly move the puck well. He can quarterback that power play. And the truth is, guys, I mean, Giordano's a pretty good puck mover there. But Bomeister's just not the puck mover that, you know, the offensive player that people thought he was going to turn out to be. And we're going to talk about that later.
Yeah, we're going to talk about Bomeister's limitations.
Babchuk's going to add in an element on the power play and maybe add a little bit more scoring from the back end. Overall, in terms of defensive ability and ability to log big minutes, I think White's probably a little bit better. But they're fairly close in talent level. There are cap ramifications here, but it seems like an odd deal, Drew.
It just seems like, it seems like a deal where the problem, if you look at the deal in how they acquired Ian White in the first place, in the Dion Phaneuf deal, it really does look like Calgary almost didn't know what they were doing in the Dion Phaneuf deal. I mean, you acquire Ian White. I mean, first of all, you give up Dion Phaneuf and Keith Ollie.
Right.
I mean,
And Schustrom.
And you're getting back Ian White, who they thought they had high hopes for Ian White, I think, when they brought him back. He was playing well in Toronto last
Absolutely.
Year.
Absolutely. Oh, he was better than Phaneuf last year.
That's right. And has he regressed, or has he just sort of plateaued, or is it just that,
Or is it too much money spent on the back end? I mean, you have Bomeister at $6.6 million this year, cap it. Regier at $4 million. Sarich at $3.6 million. And you have Giordano to sign a new contract. He's going to be a $4 million next year. I mean, is there too much money there? Do they know they can't put up any more money on the back end? That's maybe the biggest factor here.
But then why don't you just... You're going to lose him at the end of the season if he's a UFA. I mean, he's gone. You know that. You don't want to re-sign him. My question is, why do you take on Kostopoulos' contract for next year at an average cap hit of $1.025 million?
Like, that's an excellent question, Drew.
Like, I don't understand.
Isn't that very similar to last year when they traded Jokinen to the Rangers and took on the Codely contract and then signed Jokinen back?
Yeah.
It's like, are they trying to take on more salary?
That's the question, and I don't understand it. I mean, what is Kostopoulos bringing to your team? He's not bringing much, and you got him under contract for a whole other year now. If he was a UFA after the season, then okay, fine. He's better than Brett Sutter. I understand that. But
yeah, he's better than Brett Sutter.
But you're stuck with him for another year now, and he's not bringing you anything to your table that you don't already have. Like, how many times do you have to repeat the exact same team that
now,
you already
to
have?
To be fair, Kostopoulos' cap is $700,000, and the salary paid out next year is $1.1 million. So, I mean, that's only about $100,000 over the minimum salary space. And maybe he's better, a little bit better than a minimum salary player, but not much. Why can't a young player play that role? Why can't you develop a young player to put in that position? I don't know. I mean, again, there seems like a lack of vision. I mean, Eric DeHatch talked about it in the Globe, but why not hold on to White and then trade him later if you're going to rebuild? Trade him later for a prospect.
Yeah,
very good question. Again, I mean, it just seems like there's no grand plan there.
And that's the problem. And that's been the problem with Calgary for a number of years now, is that there's no, like, you just sit there and you sort of scratch your head and say, I don't know, what is your point? Well, why did you make that move? Are you just shuffling chess pieces around randomly?
Right.
Let's go on to another topic from earlier this week, and that's the Mike Richards PK Subban interactions. And we'll talk to Anthony Sanfilippo coming up about that.
That's right.
From the Delaware County Daily Times. He covers the Flyers for them. The Canadians beat the Flyers on home ice. Here's what Mike Richards have to say after the game. He said this to Team 990 in Montreal.
Did he think it wouldn't get repeated, by the way?
Well, of course he knew it would get repeated. Subban is a guy that's come into the league and hasn't earned respect. It's just frustrating to see a young guy like that come in here and so much as think that he's better than a lot of people. You have to earn respect in this league. It takes a lot. You can't just come in here as a rookie and play like that. It's not the way you get respect from other players around the league. Hopefully someone on their team addresses it, because I'm not saying I'm going to do it, but something might happen to him if he continues to be that cocky. I mean, Mike Richards is not a guy who throws around threats lightly, I don't think.
No. He's an intimidating guy to play against, and he's earned respect. He's won a gold medal now. He's won a World Junior Championship, and he took his team to the Stanley Cup Finals last year.
Do you think that Subban has done anything? First of all, I think Subban has, so far at least in his NHL career, earned the right to be somewhat cocky.
Yeah,
he's a damn good player.
He's certainly a good player, Drew. He's a great skater. He is very offensively capable. He has work to do in the defensive zone.
Right.
He gets a little bit overeager sometimes, especially rushing the puck and forcing it and not using his teammates.
Some of his spinoramas. He's right. A little bit of showboating.
If you're building from a talent base and you have to rein him in a bit, it's better than having to, push.
Build him up.
Exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, in terms of talent-wise, yeah, he's great. Now, but Drew, let's be honest here. This isn't the first time we've heard this.
I don't have a problem with a guy being cocky if he can back it up on the ice.
Fair enough.
And so far, he's been able to back it up on the ice.
Now, I guess what you're asking from Montreal's perspective is, if him not being cocky changes the way he plays, you have to live with him being cocky. But if he can play that same way and not bring that kind of hate on, Drew, I mean, there's a fine balance here.
You never want to give your opponents extra motivation.
Do you want to go into Pittsburgh? Do you want to go into Pittsburgh later in the season or in the playoffs? And Crosby is like, I am going to dominate this guy. Crosby might dominate him anyways. But if you give him some extra motivation, it might not help you.
You're right.
But at the same time, what if he's better because he plays that way? Then you have to live with it. I mean, it's a fine balance.
Well, and this is what Subban had to say in response. Or this is what he said actually last month after Don Cherry also called him out for being a little bit too cocky.
Cherry's given him a lesson to try and make him better. Richards has given him a warning.
That's right. And there's a difference because Richards can actually lay out some punishment
on
the ice.
Although Don Cherry's pretty tough in the hallways.
That's true. This is what Subban said on the, last month. I play them tough. I play them hard. I do everything I can to make sure he doesn't score, he being the opponent. Mm-hmm. If you're intimidated by guys, you're going to get eaten alive. You can't be intimidated. I'm going to go out and play it the way I've always played it. He's saying, look, this is the way I am on the ice. This is what makes me better. If Mike Richards and Don Cherry and whomever else in the NHL doesn't like it, TS, you know, do something about it. Shut me up on the ice. You know, it's great for Mike Richards to threaten the guy off the ice after you've already lost the game.
Well, Mike Richards is one of the best open ice hitters in the league, Drew.
I know.
And so PK Subban doesn't mind going up the middle with the puck on his stick once in a while. So.
Exactly. So if Richards was so tough, you know, or he was going to lay him out or he was going to show him, you know, respect, show it on the ice, Mike Richards. Do it during the game. Don't do it after you've lost. What point are you proving it that?
Times a year.
Exactly. What point are you proving? Oh, I showed him in the media. No, you didn't. The Habs won. You know.
True. The truth is, whatever he said to the Team 990, he certainly said to PK Subban on the ice.
Of course.
So I mean, that just gives us a little bit of insight in there.
Exactly. When you go like this and you open your mouth and you don't back it up with your player, the guy still wins the game. It's just empty noise. If you're going
to
be the captain of
the
team,
to PK Subban, and you know, Carey Price is the reason they were winning these games lately.
That's fine, but if you're going to talk about it off the ice, and presumably you're also talking about it on the ice,
100% you're talking about it on the ice.
Go do something on the ice to prove that you can talk about it off the ice.
You can do both. I don't have a problem with it. I like this trash talking.
I don't have a problem with the trash talking, but I'm saying Mike Richards would prove a lot more by. By laying PK Subban out on the ice and the Flyers winning the game than he does by talking about it afterwards.
Fair enough. But at the same time, I don't mind him telling the world what he's going to be doing next game.
Well, you know, it adds. That's a good rivalry, and that's been a good rivalry going back to when John LeClair left Montreal and went became the Legion of Doom.
It's a good rivalry going back to the Broad Street Bullies played the Habs in 76 there.
Yeah, I wasn't born in 76, so, you know.
Neither was I, but.
I know. We have to go with what the era that we know.
Yeah, 76.
Yeah, 76. Yeah. That's right. I mean, it was the Canadians who ended their reign,
and then won four in a row to the Islanders.
Yeah,
in 1980.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. It was the era of the dynasty in the NHL. But I mean, my point is, you know, Richards, it's great to talk about him on the ice, and I think you can do it. I think you can do it and lay Subban out. Just do it. I don't want to hear you talking about it after you've lost the game.
I disagree. I don't mind both.
To the victors go the spoils.
That's one game, Drew. I mean, who won the conference finals last year?
Listen, he didn't say it. I mean, if he said it in the playoffs last year, we don't know it.
I'm sure he did. Just telling us now.
It's the same reason why I can't stand Chris Pronger going and stealing the puck after they lose a game. You know, he did the same thing on that game also. He tried to steal the puck.
Chris Pronger can do whatever he wants as far as I'm concerned.
Win the game. Don't worry about the puck after the fact.
Two gold medals, a Stanley Cup. He's won everything. World Cup. He can do whatever he wants.
Don't go running around after you've lost a hockey game trying to steal the puck.
I prefer the fact that Richards and Pronger are established and then they do these things. PK Subban has played less than a season in the National Hockey League. Chill.
If he's not saying anything on the ice and he's just using his game and they win the game. Ultimately, the most important thing is, did you win the game?
One game. More important for me is, did you win the playoff series?
Well, the playoff series was last year.
Well, same guys battling out. The rosters haven't changed.
Really. I know that, but I don't understand. You know, I don't understand why Richards is going around Pronger is going around stealing the puck after they lose the game.
I think you just have a hate on for Chris Pronger. We weren't even talking about Pronger.
Well, but it all ties in. He did the same thing that he did in the playoffs last year, and he's doing it this year.
I have more of an issue with. I think the issue is the issue that Richards raised was earned respect, and Pronger and Richards. I know Richards is younger, but Pronger and Richards have certainly earned respect. Subban hasn't even been in the league long enough to ask that question, has he?
You know what? He won the game. That's all that matters. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Legal Curve Hockey Show, Saturday morning, 10:30 in the morning. We're pleased to be joined on the line now by our good friend from the Delaware County Daily Times, Anthony Sanfilippo. Anthony, thanks for joining us. Welcome to the program. Anthony, can you hear us? There we go. Anthony? Okay, well, we'll work on getting Anthony back on the line in a second. Let's talk about the Flyers. I mean, Anthony, are you there? Okay, well,
more.
Okay, we'll work on getting Anthony back on the line in a second.
The Flyers this year, Drew, are looking a heck of a lot better than they did last regular season. And we're going to ask Anthony about that. I mean, what's the difference? Because the roster's generally the same for the most part. Obviously, the playoff momentum has helped them, and they've got a little bit more confidence from that. But, you know, last year there was a bunch of dressing room issues. They weren't getting everything together, and, you know, winning ails everything. And the question is, maybe did winning in the playoffs ail all the dressing room problems from the regular season, and then into this season, have they just carried over with a confidence level? Because on paper, Drew, I mean, this team's great. I mean, this team is as good as it gets.
That's right. This team, I mean, and they were this talented last year, because like you said, it's pretty much the same team.
The offensive depth that they have is, you know, I mean, it's them and Washington to me.
That's right, for offensive depth. So, look, I mean, you know.
Look, I mean, you have Richards, and you have Carter, and you have Giroux, and you have, I mean, James Van Riemsdyk can't get in the lineup for a few games because he's not playing up to snuff. And, I mean, you have a defense that can move the puck that's solid, that can skate, that's big. I mean, there's so many elements to this team, and Laviolette's really got them going in the right direction.
And really, the big question mark for the Flyers always, mm-hmm. you know, since the 70s, has always been goaltending. And now they seem to have solidified it with, you know, this sort of unknown goalie.
I wouldn't go that far.
Well, you know.
For the past 15 games.
Well, okay, that's fine. But, I mean, they can only do with what, you can only use a sample of what you got so far. And he seems to have really taken a stranglehold on the goaltending job, and that's Sergei Bobrovsky, the sort of relatively unknown rookie.
Yep.
You know, I think, what is he, 25? 21, sorry, 21. You know, he just sort of came out of nowhere, and all of a sudden, he's like, "Yeah, this is my job. This is I want it."
The Flyers in the past, Drew, have had a phenomenon of
random goaltenders.
Random goalies that get hot in front of really good teams, and then people start falling in love with them as if they're great. I mean, we have to see a little more from Bobrovsky. We do.
Yeah.
But hey, I mean, it helps because you have Brian Boucher and you have Michael Layton, who are, if anything, are average goaltenders at best. Average at best.
And the problem, of course, with Layton is now he's now under contract for another couple of years, which is, I mean, it was
We talked about that ad nauseum over the summer.
Yeah, we didn't understand that deal over the summer.
I still don't understand that deal.
That was a real head scratcher then, of course. But I mean, it's just it really is a team that should be at the top of the heap.
Yeah, and they are.
And they are.
This is the thing. I mean, they just recently signed Jeff Carter, and we want to talk about that, and we'll see if we can get Anthony on the line. But in the meantime, we want to talk about that contract because it was signed right after we got off the air last week. You know?
Yeah, literally, we were sitting down having the post-show breakfast, and all of a sudden, Jeff Carter is like, "Oh, well, can we go back on and an update on the show?"
He was cutting into an omelet, and then the news broke.
It was a feta omelet, if I'm not mistaken.
The cap at Jeff Carter signed for a 11-year deal. And, you know, out of all the deals you see these days, I don't like the long-term deal, Drew. You know that. We talked about that. I don't like the 4 or 5. I don't like anything over 4 or 5 years. I don't like that. But in all honesty, I mean, you see what happened. And what you see is he signs a deal for 11 years. And right now, Jeff Carter is 25. So he gets to 36. He's not in the 45 years, not 42. He's going to be 36 at the end of the deal. And his cap is going to be 5.2.
Yeah.
Not terrible. Lower and more reasonable than most contracts. Now, realize this. At his age, he's 25. I mean, the prime of these guys' careers, you know, isn't 27 to 30, really, as people think. As far as the stats are concerned, it's more so 23 to 26.
Yeah.
So you have to take that into account. But as you go, you know, as you go along and UFA and all these years that you're buying out, I mean, you have to pay market value for these players. To sign a guy for about 5.2 of a cap hit, Drew, you know, you're getting some pretty good years there. And having Mike Richards, sign for a long period of time at a $5.7 million. That's for $10 million, as opposed to, you know, Kovalchuk eating up a lot more cap or whatever it may be.
Kovalchuk's eating that up on his own.
Well, I like the contract. I mean, I don't like a long-term deal. Let me qualify that. But if it's going to be a long-term deal, I like this long-term deal. Let me put it that way. I mean, Kovalchuk's eating at 6.6, right? So, again, you're getting it at 1 point, you know, for Jeff Carter, a guy who is, you know, a year younger than Kovalchuk. You're getting him for 1.4 less per year.
Also with a history of success.
A history of two-way play, too.
Yeah, I mean, this is a guy who you can... I mean, these are built guys who you can certainly... I mean, they already have built their team around these guys. But for the next 10 years, there's no reason why these guys can't be the core of your team. And I'll go to war any given week with the core of Mike Richards and Jeff Carter.
Yeah,
because they're going to be accountable.
True.
They're going to demand accountability of their teammates. And you know that you're going to get their all for 82 games a year.
Look at the Flyers' core, Drew. I mean, you have, I mean, the Beer contract you'd rather not have on there. But Richards at 5.7. Carter at going to be at 5.2. And then you just signed Claude Giroux for 3.7. I mean, there's a nice core there for long term. I mean, they don't have that many guys signed long term here. And that's a nice core.
And then you have Pronger, and
Mezeros is a little bit questionable, but you have a lot of pieces here that make you think, well, the Flyers are going to be around the top of the standings for the next 10 years. Can you say 10 years?
If you have Carter and Richards under contract, and I don't believe that Giroux's ever going to actually hit UFA. I think they'll just re-sign him, after.
And he's been terrific this year. We want to talk about him too. I mean, he's playing at a point of game right now. His offensive skill level is off the charts.
Anthony's actually at the Flyers practice. That's why we're having a little bit of difficulty getting him on the air. His phone seems to be cutting out on us, but we're going to keep trying and see if we can get him on at some point tonight. But I mean, if you have Giroux, Carter, and Richards, as your core of forwards, you have everything you'd want in three players right there.
You do. Right now you have Hartnell, and you have Hartnell under contract for this year and the next 2 years. And you have Briere under contract. You have an offense, and then you have James Van Riemsdyk coming up for RFA. We'll see how he progresses as a player. He's going to get better. Ville Leino now is the big issue, guys, and we haven't talked about that. It's Ville Leino. Do they have room for Ville Leino? He's coming at UFA.
Yeah.
Obviously, he went from Detroit, where he didn't, produce offensively the way people thought he was going to. He's a different kind of game. Holds onto the puck a little bit more than the Detroit guys, the most Detroit guys, or at least with the lack of skating ability that he has. Comes to Philly, really meshes well last year on that line in the playoffs, okay? Now the question is, what do you do? Do you sign him long-term? Ville Leino? I mean, I don't know. I don't know if they have the room. Ville Leino's 26 years old, so he's not old. Well, he's 26. Do you have the room, and do you take... I mean, remember, in a cap system, you're taking money from him. And if you're giving it to him, somebody else is not going to get it.
That's right. Well, that's the question is. I mean, yeah, I think you can re-sign Leino, but I think it has to be the problem is he's going to want a long-term, solid deal where he's making a decent amount of money. And I'd be hesitant to give him more than 2 years.
I could give him maybe a little more.
Maybe three?
Yeah, no more than four max. I'd prefer even two. The truth is, I would do two at a little more, but I wouldn't go. I wouldn't go over the top here. I wouldn't give Leino that much money. And to me, he's a product of a good offensive system. He's a skilled player. He's not going to be the difference between them winning and losing.
And if you pay him like he's going to be the difference, then that's when you get into trouble in the salary cap.
And that's
system.
Just it, Drew. I mean, the truth is, James Van Riemsdyk could finally take the next step. And then you have his offense in Van Riemsdyk, and you have him on the roster.
Yeah.
Why are you signing Leino? And then is he ever going to take the next step? I mean,
Here's Leino's numbers so far this year. 20 games played, 3 goals, 13 assists. He's got 16 points. He's a plus 8, averaging just under 16 minutes of ice time a game. A good player on that Flyers team, but not the key cog, not the guy that stirs the drink.
Not irreplaceable. I mean, if you have Briere, one, and then Richards, and then Carter, and then Hartnell, and then Van Riemsdyk, and then Giroux. In reality, that should be your top six going forward, should you not want to re-sign Zhirinov or Leino. Leino and Zhirinov both want to kind of sign, short-term deals and can stick around. I mean, you're more than open.
You'll listen to that. Especially on Leino. I think Zhirinov, whatever. Zhirinov has always been a, take it or leave it kind of player. He's never been a difference maker. But, I mean, you look at their sort of their future going forward, and there's no contracts there. I mean, even the Briere one, which we agree is overpaid.
Yeah,
there's nothing there that's going to be an albatross on your team, like the Kovalchuk deal could very well be for New
Pronger
Jersey.
Maybe later on at the end when he's near 40 and they're paying him because they signed it before he was 35. If people aren't aware, what happened was Chris Pronger signed the deal. And usually if you sign a deal before 35, then before the player's 35 years of age, and then, later on when he wants to retire, he can just retire. The money comes off the books. You don't pay anything.
Right.
In this situation, what happened was they signed Pronger before he was 35, but the contract came into effect after he was 35.
He was on a previous contract till after he was 35.
Right.
And so now this contract, because they signed him to a long-term deal, if he retires, you're still paying his cap hit.
But, I mean, you're going to take... The truth is, I mean, it was a mistake by management signing, and that has to be noted. But the truth is, you'll take 4 or 5 amazing years from Pronger to deal with 1 year of him not playing and being on the cap, right?
It's not the end of the world.
So, I mean, there's been worse problems.
Yeah, there's exactly. But, I mean, you look at their defense. And, I mean, I agree, they're paying Mezeros too much money. Not his fault.
Their offseason moves didn't make any sense, but yeah.
But, I mean, you still look at that defense, and there's a lot to like there.
Oh, there is. I mean, Kimmo Timonen is one of the most underrated defensemen in the National Hockey League. Chris Pronger is one of the top 3-4 guys. Matt Carl can bring you some nice offensive puck movement. Braden Coburn's a solid skater. He can move the puck. He's becoming a little bit more physical. He's a good player. He's a good top 4 defenseman. And then you have the depth, obviously, in the Mezeros, and then you added in a Matt Walker. I don't know why, but you added a Matt Walker kind of player, a tough kind of player, and you brought in Sean O'Donnell. There's a lot of depth on that team.
And that's really – depth is the new mantra in the NHL. That's what everybody is always striving for.
If you
is
can maintain
depth.
The depth.
Well, if you can, you know, but it seems like you can't win. At least you can't win a Stanley Cup without depth. I mean, Chicago had their depth last year. Vancouver has went out in their point. Their entire point, the purpose this year was to get depth.
And they have depth.
And they have depth.
Can you maintain the depth?
Well, that's the question. Can you maintain it? Can it keep going? I mean, but you don't want the depth to become overwhelming so that it's a salary albatross.
You know how you maintain depth, Drew? You draft. You develop like the Flyers have. Because if you have a guy like Lino and you have a guy like Zverev and you can plug a guy in like Van Riemsdyk and plug in the next guy. I mean, if you have cheap players you can plug in for established veterans and get close to the same production,
yeah,
you're golden. You're going to consistently be one of the deep teams. And lots of teams can't do that because they can't replace the veterans who are asking for more money with talented young players.
That's right. And if you need a player to bridge a gap for 1 year and sign him for a one-year contract, then you're able to do that. I mean, that's the key to success, and the too many teams don't seem to be able to remember that.
Anthony's at practice, but we can get him on later. We'll pull him on. He's always flexible.
Yeah, he's a good guy. We'll try and get Anthony back on, talk a little bit more about the Flyers. When we come back after this commercial break, we go on the beat to talk about what beat writers are writing about. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Legal Curve Hockey Show, 10:45 in the morning. It's time to go on the beat around the NHL to see what our favorite beat writers are talking about in their local cities. Let's start today in Boston, where we have Kevin Paul DuPont of the Boston Globe, who comes out swinging, really. Continuing on with our top story topic about Colin Campbell and his emails. And he says that Colin Campbell must be removed from his role as NHL disciplinarian in light of the Mark Savard comments.
First of all, Drew, before we even get into it, it's interesting that he takes that position, considering Kevin Paul DuPont is now covering Gregory Campbell.
Right. I mean, let's start at the part.
Give him credit for having an opinion.
Well, yeah, but I mean, he should. That's what he's, you know, he's being paid for. But to me, that's the sort of the part that's going untalked about very often is the Gregory Campbell role in this. Now, to no fault of Gregory Campbell's, besides the fact that his dad happens to be the NHL disciplinarian, you know, he seems to be getting. I mean, I'm sure it's hard enough to be Gregory Campbell as is with his dad in that job.
Okay,
but now his dad is really dragging him through the mud.
Well. Yeah, I guess so. I mean, unintentionally, obviously. But yeah, he is. And it's an awkward position for him to be in. I mean, I think the crux of this article, though, Drew, is really calling out Colin Campbell and what's happened and basically, you know, calling for his job. Kevin Paul DuPont is probably one of the most respected writers in the United States in all of hockey. I mean, him and Kevin Allen really are the top two writers in the American hockey writing landscape. And we had Kevin Allen on our first show here on Sports Radio 1290. And I haven't had Kevin Paul DuPont spoke to him before. And this article is... You know, he knows his words carry a lot of weight, and so him coming out and saying this, you know, shouldn't go unnoticed. And that's why we're bringing it up here, because it's, you know, you and I mean, I don't necessarily think they should call for his job in the situation, but I understand the argument, and maybe you want to, you know, shed some more light on what Kevin's position was.
Well, it just says that, you know, I mean, the point of Kevin Paul DuPont's article is really that, you know, Colin Campbell's job demands the utmost of clarity and integrity. And simply by pressing send on those emails and having them released, I mean, you know, if they stayed private, well, you know, what we don't know can't hurt us. But the second that they became in the public realm, he should have lost his job.
I mean, he's got to know also, Drew. Going back to the two segments ago, I mean, you got to just, if you want to stay on the phone, nobody's going to ever be taping you.
Well, it's just stupid. It's just arrogance is what it is. I mean, and too many people nowadays think, I mean, and you know, what bothered me a lot about about the entire scenario is that I didn't think that Colin Campbell was as remorseful as he should have been. I think he sort of brushed it off a little bit too much.
But was he told to not be remorseful by the NHL higher-ups?
Who knows? But the NHL didn't seem to take it as seriously as they should have. They sort of, it's a hockey dad sending a passionate email.
It also happened. I mean, for them, it happened 3 years ago, right?
Yeah. It happened 3 years ago, but that doesn't make it any better. It doesn't make it any better. I mean, the second you call a guy a little faker, your attitude isn't going to change about him. I don't think he's gone 180 degrees and he loves Mark Savard now.
If it was seen as that big of a deal, Drew, wouldn't the ref who eventually lost that claim against
the arbitration hearing?
Lost the arbitration hearing. Wouldn't he have kind of leaked that news to somebody he thought would make it?
Well, who knows what the ref was going to do?
You know what I mean, though. If he thought it was that much of an indictment of Colin Campbell and his character, wouldn't he have kind of?
Well, I mean,
quietly release it to somebody, give somebody a tip.
But the problem was back then, nobody knew. I mean, it took a while for it to come. They got into the public realm, and then piecing the, you know, the, you're forgetting, Mark Savard's name wasn't actually in the public documents.
Drew, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to put that together.
Okay,
it's pretty easy to put that together.
The point is, I think that
especially anybody who followed the Rangers. Yeah, come on. The combination's right there.
But, I mean, I don't think it will cost Colin Campbell his job, but I think it should have. I think, or if it shouldn't have.
I don't think that should have. I think his actual, the job he's done should have cost
that's
him.
That's fine. Maybe that should have been, maybe this should have been the impetus.
Should never have come to that. It should never have come to this because he hasn't been policing the game as he should have.
Well, that's fine. I mean, perhaps they should have fired him. Perhaps they should have used this as an opportunity to get rid of him from him being bad at his job to begin with.
That's a fair point.
Okay. Moving to Denver, and Mark Kisla of the Denver Post laments the lack of Avalanche fans at Colorado Avalanche games.
He wrote a similar article last year, too, but this is interesting.
Despite the Avalanche being young, talented, and successful on the ice, so they're 10-7-1. And they actually, that's 10-7-1 without their starting goaltender, who's just got back this weekend. And this is the team that had that shocking run into the playoffs last year.
Mm-hmm.
This is a good team, a young team, and he really lays the criticism at the Colorado Avalanche organization for not doing enough to highlight their young, talented players instead of trying to sort of... He says that Denver is a city that needs its superstar. They need to rally around a superstar. And that the Avalanche haven't done a good enough job in telling their fans that, hey, Matt Duchene is our superstar.
Well, I don't necessarily agree. I mean, the Colorado Rockies don't have a superstar, really.
Well, Troy Tulowitzki.
Sure, okay. I mean, he's one of them, and I guess you have him in and stuff like that. I mean, the Denver Broncos really don't have a superstar.
Apparently, it's Tim Tebow, though. I mean, apparently, this is what he says in the article, is that Tebow and Tulowitzki jerseys are everywhere in Denver, but there's no Avs jerseys because nobody knows whose name to put on the back of their jersey.
Or maybe yours is not in a hockey town. Maybe they were Forsberg, Patrick Roy, and Joe Sakic fans, not hockey fans.
I think they sort of fell in, when the Avs moved to Colorado from Quebec City, I think they sort of fell into a Stanley Cup champion.
Well, they did. 100% they did. And I mean, are they hockey fans or are they fans of those players? I mean, show it.
Well, it doesn't...
Paul Stastny, Chris Stewart, these guys are great hockey players. I watch the Avs play. They're exciting. I mean, they don't always win every game, but it's an exciting game. They play up and down. Sometimes they give up more chances than they get themselves. But I mean, you have a great goaltender there. He's really, really carved a name out for himself. You have an exciting young core, Matt Duchene. He can handle the puck. He can skate. He's an exciting player. You know, bring it. Bring some enthusiasm to the games. Nobody there.
Well, the problem is they're in the bottom six in NHL attendance.
Do you blame it on the Do you blame it on the marketing team, or do you blame it on the fans, or do you blame it on both?
Well, I think you have to blame it on both. I mean, if you know, the fans are the ones. I mean, I can't blame a fan if he doesn't want to buy a ticket.
Well, in this economy, I understand that.
Yeah,
but they're buying tickets to other teams.
That's
so
right.
What's the argument there?
Well, I mean, they had, you know, in the game against San Jose, Colorado, a rematch of last year's Stanley Cup playoff match. They had, less than 10,000 people in the arena, apparently.
Before we get to the next article, though, talk about fans. I watched the highlights of the Atlanta-Washington game last night.
There was nobody there.
There was nobody there.
I mean,
arguably the best player in the world coming into town, and there was nobody. There were blocks of empty seats in the lower bowl.
You can do that in almost every game in Atlanta, though. It's not even amusing.
Unbelievable.
But there was nobody there. But I mean, in Colorado, that's if that isn't a hockey town, why isn't it a hockey town?
It's a great question, Drew.
It's cold. They have snow. They have ice. It's not like these concepts are foreign.
You can get tickets for the Colorado Avalanche, their next home game next Saturday against Minnesota. Four tickets, four Pepsis, four family meals for $99. Don't tell me that cost is an issue.
You can't do that. You can't go to a movie for much cheaper than that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's $25 a person. You can't do it for much cheaper than that.
With food.
I mean,
go to the movies, get a ticket, get a drink, get food. You're going to spend $80.
Yeah. So, I mean, so that's not a lot there in terms of, you're right. The tickets are, they're not overly expensive. And that's what, in the article, Mark says that, credit to him for, to the Avs for not gouging on their ticket prices. But I mean, something about Denver that's just not a real hockey town. And it's puzzling because
Hockey is big there too. That's why it's weird. But
because college hockey is big. So I mean, it's sort of odd that city wouldn't be a dominant hockey market because it should be.
Agreed.
Going to Montreal, Ira Podell of the Montreal Gazette.
No, Ira Podell is an AP writer, but it was in the Montreal Gazette.
AP writer. Yeah.
It's an excellent feature for an AP writer to get in on a Montreal player.
That's right. It was an article on Habs captain Brian Gionta. The topic being that Gionta is small in stature, but what he lacks in size, he makes up for in heart and passion.
He really is a natural leader there. Podell does a good job kind of explaining to you what Brian Gionta is, what he's all about, and why he's good for the role.
I mean, I was surprised at how well the Habs have started this year.
Me too. Oh, yeah.
I thought they were going to take a step back from last year.
Me too.
And they've seemed to have banded together.
It wasn't necessarily a step back from last year, Drew. I mean, the regular season wasn't anything to write home about. Maybe a step back from the playoff run.
Yeah, sorry.
I mean, they've taken that momentum and moved forward with it.
That's right. And it seems like this is a team, and this is a team that's rolling out, you know, three or four lines at you on a nightly basis.
And their first line's been their third line, and their third line's been their first line.
Exactly. And that's great when your first line isn't, you know, doing what they should be. And for a while there, it was a slow start for that first line. They had their second and third line really stepping up their games. So, you know, that's a good recipe for success when your role players are you know, doing things on the score sheet for you.
And I always like feature articles like this. Gets you a good insight into who the person is and what the player's all about.
And it's especially nice that it wasn't a hatchet job done on a Montreal Canadian for once.
Yes.
Because that's
once.
Rare.
For once.
I mean, I'm sure that'll come later on in the year. They'll be criticized. Oh, yeah. Gianta. He's taking French lessons, but he's not doing enough with his French lessons, you know.
Yeah.
He's spending too much time in the weight room, but not enough time hitting the Le Cahier or whatever.
Yeah, I saw him at a restaurant, but he didn't order his meal in French.
Yeah, you know, don't worry. I'm sure that they'll get him for something down the line, because that's just the way they are. Moving to the final article, and this is coming out of the Vancouver Sun. It is Brad Zimmer of the Vancouver Sun talking to Canucks general manager Mike Gillis. Gillis is not concerned with the Canucks' slow start on the road, as they are 4-5-2 on the road so far this season.
Mike Gillis is a confident guy, and you know what? Mike Gillis knows what he's doing, and he knows the team he has right now, and he's not panicking because he knows that group moving forward is going to be tough to beat. And well, that's what I got from this article by Brad Zimmer, is the confidence level that Mike Gillis expresses. And I think that runs down, you know, I talked about it before in the show, is top to bottom. I mean, if you have confidence at the GM level through the coach and through the players, everybody knows that. You know, I mean, if you're panicking and you're calling up Nazem Kadri or whatever, for example, the players know that. They know that there's a desperation. Mike Gillis has a quiet confidence. I think that team's taken it on, and I think that this team is going to be tough to knock out of the playoffs. That's why I have them winning the Cup.
Well, you look at them, and they're really not at full strength, especially on their blue line right now.
I mean, there's a depth component that we just spoke about, and if you have the depth, you can roll it. Guys, if you're healthy scratching Keith Ballard, that means you got players who can play. And I realize some of those guys I don't trust in a playoff situation, but throughout the regular season, if you want to make a point of it, if you have enough depth to make a point of Keith Ballard, that means that you're in a good position. And Mike Gillis has a quiet confidence about him. And that serves the team very well.
You know, it's interesting to point out, I mean, of course, we're intimately familiar with the Vancouver Canucks here in Winnipeg as being the farm team, the Moose are the farm team for the Canucks. I was at the Moose game last week. It would not shock me if the Canucks and the Moose had an organizational championship this year, if the Canucks won the Stanley Cup and the Moose won the Calder Cup. That wouldn't surprise me. And that's a testament to Mike Gillis, because really ultimately, and to Craig Heisinger of the Moose too, of course. But, you know, ultimately, those guys know how to run an organization. And from top to bottom, the Canucks are really becoming one of the class organizations in the NHL and, of course, the Moose in the AHL. So kudos to everybody around for that. Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to touch on some NHL news and notes, where our good friend Sean Avery, of course, is going to be front and center. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 11 a.m., top of the hour, 1 hour down, 1 hour to go here on Sports Radio 1290. News and notes time in the NHL, where just a hectic week, and we're going to start with what happened last Sunday in sort of an odd time for a hockey game. I think it was.
Well, what they did, Drew, is that they did the Rangers Oilers game was early because they wanted to get it over before the Giants game got started.
That's right. The Giants had the late game last. Right. They had the 4:15 Eastern game. The game started at 1 o'clock last Sunday afternoon.
I actually think it was actually 12:30 in the East Coast. It started 11:30.
Was that 11:30 here?
Yeah.
Okay. Anyways, and it was a weird time, but you know, makes sense to not want to compete against the Giants. The Rangers blew out the Oilers on home ice. You know, end of a long, disappointing road trip for the Oilers. There's going to be lots of those this year, as we're going to chronicle later on in rapid fire. But overshadowing the game as usual with his antics is Sean Avery. In case you missed it. Sean Avery laid a hard but clean hit on Colin Frazier of the Oilers. You know, as has become, you know, the code in the NHL now, if you hit a guy cleanly, that means he has to fight, which I think is absolute garbage.
Yeah, I mean, we should talk about that quickly. It's unnecessary for these teams, these players, to continue to fight guys who hit. You know, Sean Avery is a dirty player, and he pushes the edge. But yeah, it was a clean hit, and that was fine. I don't know why there was a fight because of that.
Yeah, there was no reason for Smead to go really over to. There was no reason for Ladislav Smead to go challenge Sean Avery to a fight,
right.
But he did it.
But he did it.
I mean, and, you know, Sean Avery, you know, apparently according to Smead, and this is what he says, he's just started talking about it now. You know, what Avery said to Smead is, we'll go next shift. You know, Smead was ready to drop the gloves. He pretty much was, mm-hmm. you know, ready to drop them. Avery said, we'll go next shift. Okay, Smead, you know, took him at his word. Then just as Smead was sort of skating away, half turned to Avery. Avery lunges at him, grabs him, and one punches him, knocks him out, gives him a concussion. Typical Sean Avery bull.
Yeah, Sean Avery's a coward.
A 100% coward. It's unbelievable what this guy... This guy just... Look, play on the edge, be an agitator. There's a ton of agitators in the NHL who never cross the line. Sean Avery doesn't know what the line is.
No, and the truth is, I find it ironic to watch him on that team because we know that John Tortorella can't stand him. You can tell Tortorella hates him.
Yeah, it looks like I'm stuck defending this jerk on a nightly basis.
And Sather brought him in because I honestly think Sather reads Larry Brooks and decides that his ideas are great and brings him in. Seriously, I'm not even kidding.
Well, I mean, we've discussed Sather and his issues a lot.
So he brings him in, and John Tortorella hates him.
Yeah.
And he does something like this. You can see Tortorella's just disgusted.
Tortorella wanted to knock the guy out.
Yeah. And Joe Micheletti, yeah, who's the color guy on the broadcast. I mean, Sam Rosen wasn't doing this game.
Because he was doing the Fox Sunday football.
The Niners Rams game. But Joe Micheletti was. And Joe Micheletti, you know, guys, if the color commentator or play-by-play guy
on the home team.
Home team calls you out, I mean, they fly with you.
Yeah.
They call you out. Got something wrong. And Eric Christensen, actually, this wasn't spoken about.
That's
the
right,
next day in the post,
yeah,
said, hey, look like a sucker punch to me.
Yeah,
and then he had a gag order on him after that. But all because of Sean Avery. And it was a cowardly play. Fight him or don't fight him. Don't tell him you're not going to fight him and then let his guard down and punch him in the face.
What are you accomplishing?
Drop the gloves. Yeah. Go ahead, get head-to-head with consent here.
I'm shocked that in the NHL, I mean, the level of disrespect that there is amongst players in the NHL this year has been well chronicled. Not this year, but for the last 5-10 years. The level of disrespect has grown immensely. I'm shocked that, you know, nobody has sucker punched Sean Avery, taken the 12 or 15 game suspension, and knocked the guy unconscious on the ice.
I'm actually surprised, too. I mean, I'm surprised a guy like Theo Pekham hasn't gotten to him earlier.
Just, you know, what I mean, it was Domi on Bukaboom, wasn't it?
It's also Matt Cook, though. I mean, Mark Savard still hasn't returned to the ice. And Matt Cook and Sean Avery are the same person, to me.
No, Sean Avery's worse. Sean Avery is worse.
I don't agree. I think Matt Cook's worse.
No, I don't think so. Sean Avery's worse.
Dirtier. I think Matt Cook's dirtier.
I disagree. I think Sean Avery... Well, they're both crazy. I agree with you, Tim, there. But, I mean, you watch Sean Avery, and it's stunning that one goon on a player, on a team, just hasn't knocked him out cold. I'm shocked. I'm not advocating that it be done, but the guy would bring it upon if it happened.
Tim, help me out here. Is Drew Mike Richards right now?
I'm not Mike Richards right
Aren't
now.
Aren't you just calling somebody to hit him? Basically, like Mike Richards said about PK Subban.
I don't play the game. If I was playing the game, I'd want to do it.
I'm kind of on the fence here.
Okay, so yeah.
I'm not playing the game. I can't knock out Sean Avery. But what I'm saying is, I'm shocked that somebody who does play the game has to put up with his bull on a nightly basis. Hasn't dropped the glove.
The argument is, Drew, is taking the fine. If you do that, then you're doing exactly what he wants you to do.
Well, guess what? He might be unconscious. He won't know what happened. I'm not saying that it's hard to justify anybody knocking another guy unconscious, but if there's anybody that quote-unquote should happen to, it would be Avery. Let's move to – well, let's stay in actually New York and move to the Long Island where the Islanders have consistently and thoroughly held the mantra of most dysfunctional NHL franchise. They fired their head coach earlier this week.
They were to pick somebody out of the basement who's a GM of their NHL 2011 game on Xbox and put him in charge of the Islanders, they'd be doing a better job. And I mean, it's more from the top than from Garth Snow.
You're talking about Charles Wang the owner of the team.
Yeah.
The Islanders, I mean, I'm not sure who it was who tweeted this on our Twitter page, at Illegal Curve.
That was me.
It was you.
Yeah.
Said that it's funny that they fired their NHL head coach when they haven't fielded an NHL team in 3 years.
Well, it's funny when you fire Scott Gordon for your team being 28th in the National Hockey League or 30th in the National Hockey League when your team was projected to be 30th in the National Hockey League.
Yeah.
I mean, you are what you are, right?
Yeah. I mean, they have some good young building blocks, but nobody expected this team to be talented or contending for a playoff spot this year. They're not underachieving.
Let's go over their roster, Drew. We have a second.
We have more than a second to go over their roster.
Let's go over their roster. Let me just go up to the AHL.com website. John Tavares, okay. Matt Molson, Trent Hunter, Josh Bailey, Oposo, the player formerly known as Doug Waite, Michael Grabner, who was waived by Florida
after they acquired him for Keith Ballard,
Matt Martin, Rob Schrempf, a friend of ours but more of a specialty player, Blake Como, Zenon Konopka, P.A. Parenteau, Franz Nielsen, Trevor Gillies. You have a lot of guys who could be third and fourth liners on National Hockey League teams. I like a couple of those pieces, you know. To pick out a few, Poso has obviously potential. Tavares is a great player. Bailey has some potential, though he hasn't become the player so far that they want him to be. And then Franz Nielsen is probably one of the more underrated players in the National Hockey League. Okay, so there you have a bunch of third or fourth line players on other teams, and then John Tavares, who gets to play with third or fourth line players. Okay, then you have their defense, which I'm actually going to go to the ECHL website to look at their defense. Mark Streit's injured, so you have Wisniewski, who went from expendable in Anaheim to the number one defenseman there.
Sorry, an Anaheim team which is weak on defense at that.
Radek Martinek, Mark Eaton, couldn't crack Pittsburgh. Mike Motto, who moved over from New Jersey, is a bit of a puck mover. Bruno Gervais, Jack Hillen, who has some talent as a youngster. Dylan Reese, I mean, Andrew McDonald. Who are these guys? Come on. I mean, who are these guys? Hillen's 24 already. I mean, that defense right there is I'm sorry. I mean, these guys have talent. But that defense right there is not a National Hockey League defense. It's not even half of a National Hockey League defense. Then you have DiPietro on his 345-year contract. And then Dwayne Rolston's actually been pretty good. And by the way, the highest-paid player in the team is Alexei Yashin.
And he hasn't been on the team in 3 years.
And Brandon Witt's pulling in $1 million for being bought out.
I mean, it's just all sorts of ugly.
I mean, where do you start there? Is it the forwards? Is it the defense? Is it the goaltending? Is it the players they're not paying?
I'll tell you who it's not. It's not the coach.
It's the coaches. Yeah, it's the coaches. Yeah, okay.
It's just, I mean,
their games are on University Radio in Hofstra. They're trying to move the arena. They don't know what they're doing there. Nobody goes to the games because, to be honest with you, I wouldn't pay any money to go see that team either.
It's just, it's almost, I mean, it's, you don't want to laugh about it, but it's comical.
You fire your former PR guy.
Well, let's get into that. Let's transition into that, because the Islanders didn't just make news by firing their head coach. And I mean, I'm not sure, I can't remember the name of the guy they replaced him with.
Jack Capuano.
Doesn't make a difference. He'll be fired 3 years down the road for now. And I mean, you know, the real problem with the Islanders is they're so talent thin that they can't let their good players develop in the minors before you ruin their confidence in the NHL. They immediately ruin their confidence in the NHL far too soon. You know, if you think that the Leafs may have been, playing with fire, calling up Kadri too early, that's the entire team.
Yeah.
I mean, bad team, bad franchise since for the last 20 years.
Yeah, really, really.
It's really been 20 years.
Yeah.
Now God bless him. I mean, I can't understand this one. Chris Botta, the national hockey writer for AOL Fanhouse.
And he has it on blog called IslandersPointBlank.com.
Islanders being the key word there. He used to work for the team.
For 20 years.
For 20 years, he worked for their team. Now they...
Chris Botta actually wrote the foreword in Hockey Prospectus, did I tell you that?
No.
Yeah.
You're going to plug the book
now? No, I'm not. I'm just going to mention that.
Okay. They rescinded his credential, because this is the most pressing issue that the New York Islanders have to deal with in their franchise. They rescinded his credential and really didn't give him any reason whatsoever for why they said you're not allowed to cover the team anymore.
His article, I believe, two or three days before that was that Scott Gordon wasn't the problem.
Well, Scott Gordon isn't the problem. That's not earth-shattering news, Chris Botta. I mean, that's not earth-shattering news, Garth Snow. That's not earth-shattering news, Charles Wang. The problem is that your team just isn't good enough. So you take away a guy who's covered your team passionately.
I have a big issue with, it seems like the trend these days of not being able to accept honest criticism.
Fair criticism.
Even, you know what? I don't think there's personal vendettas here. It's an opinion piece. If you're not able to accept an opinion, and maybe it's contrary to what you believe or you want the perception of your team to be, deal with it. We're all adults here.
Do you think this is Wang? Do you think this is Charles Wang, or do you think this is general manager Garth Snow?
No. I'm pretty sure this is owner Charles Wang, and Garth Snow has to bite the bullet because he wants to be a GM in the National Hockey League. Remember, the 3 hours ago didn't mention the fact that they hired and fired Neil Smith within 3 days.
And Neil Smith only was the architect of a Stanley Cup winning team.
Yeah.
I mean, not the kind of guy you would want on your team, apparently.
Well, Neil Smith has his ups and downs in terms of GM ship, but
he's better than Garth Snow right now.
No, but that, Drew. But I'm just saying, like, again, that dysfunctionality I think is demonstrated in a move like that.
I mean, this is just a disaster of an organization. They don't have an arena. They don't really have a home. They don't know if they want to be in New York. They don't know if they want to be in Kansas City. They don't know if they want to be in China. They're not sure where they want to be, because weren't they supposed to go to China for training camp a couple years ago?
I don't know. I know that they're maybe the only way to save that team within the five boroughs is to move them to Queens.
Move them somewhere. Get a stadium built. Do something. Get a new owner. It's a disaster on Long Island, and the problem certainly isn't Scott Gordon or Chris Botta. That's for sure. Anyways, let's leave it there. When we come back, we're going to try and get Anthony Sanfilippo, and we have Chip Alexander coming up from the Rally News and Observer. Lots more still to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm sort of surprised in the live event lineup that we just heard, they didn't mention that you're going to be out and about on the town tonight, Richard.
All right, Drew. You know, throw me right under the bus.
Right under the bus. No second thoughts about it. Anyways, welcome back to the show. And we're pleased to be joined now by Anthony Sanfilippo of the Delaware County Daily Times. Anthony, welcome to the program.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for coming and joining us again, Anthony. Let's start with Thursday night's game in Philly, which obviously seemed to be a 80s retro night there with an 8-7 score. You know, how did it feel to cover a game that, you know, could have resembled the game the Oilers played in the mid-80s?
It's so funny that you say that, because one of the things that I put out on Twitter was that it reminded me of Edmonton, Winnipeg, circa 1985. It was crazy. It was really just a wild thing to watch. And it was, you know, you kind of expected it to slow down at some point, but it was surprising to me that it took until the third period. I mean, I thought after the crazy first period, 5-4, I thought, all right, well, these two teams, they ran around a little bit. Now they're going to go in. Coaches are going to talk to them. They're going to play a little bit more defensive now. And the second period, it came out, it was just as crazy in the second period as it was in the first. So it was certainly entertaining to watch. I wouldn't want to see a lot of games that way, but to have one like that every once in a while is certainly appealing. It's like eye candy, hockey eye candy, if you ask me. So,
Anthony, this team has a lot of scoring ability, but I wanted to ask you a question. You know, we had you on a couple of times last year. In terms of this year, the roster isn't that, it hasn't changed that much, except for, you know, obviously the Jared of kind of Gagne swap and things like that. What's the regular season difference between this team last year, which couldn't get it together, and this team this year?
I'm going to give you two things that I think have been the most important difference for the Flyers. And the one is a little bit underrated, and that's the third pairing defense with Sean O'Donnell and Andre Mesaros. They've actually probably been the most reliable and consistent defensive players. It's funny saying that after an 8-7 game, but in all honesty, those two guys have been a huge addition in the sense that they're both players who've played higher up in the depth chart in previous organizations. They're both steady defensemen, and they can take on a role of 18 to 20 minutes a night and keep guys like Pronger and Tiemannin and Coburn and Carl a little more fresh, because those guys were playing 23, 24, upwards of 27 minutes a night last year. And I think that they kind of got worn down in certain games. So to have O'Donnell and Mesaros there playing at the level they're playing at and giving the other guys some time off really is a huge difference defensively for the Flyers. The other difference, of course, is the coach. Peter Laviolette is not going to let this team go through the kind of doldrums that John Stevens let them go through. And that's not a knock on John Stevens as much as it is high praise of Laviolette, because Stevens was much more of a player's coach. He was really close to a lot of the guys. And as such, I think he kind of lost sight of maybe some of the bad habits that some of the players might have gotten themselves into. Whereas Laviolette is not that kind of guy. He's more of a, he's very fair, but he's more hands-on with them as to accountability and responsibility. And therefore, when something is not working, he's going to make the proper adjustment. Look at a guy like Zhirdev. He's making $2 million. He sat him out two games. James Van Riemsdyk was the number two overall pick, not scoring goals. He sat him out four games. He's not afraid to make those decisions and get these guys righted when they come back into the lineup.
Anthony, you know, the Flyers' goaltending has always been an issue. We've talked about it with you, you know, more than once, certainly. What can you tell us about Sergei Bob Bobrovsky?
Well, you know what? It's interesting. I think I'm maybe the only person in the Philadelphia market who has not completely fallen in love with the goalie. And it's, the reason is because I still see certain weaknesses in his game. He's a good goalie for 22 years old. He's really impressed me with the fact that he's come over and play in North America after never playing this style, just playing in the KHL for such an awful team, and to be able to come in and put up the numbers that he's put up have been impressive to a point. I do think that he's a little bit of a product of the defense in front of him, but at times he has come up big and saved the Flyers. Yet I still think that he's got a weakness at five hole. I think that because of how quick he is from post to post. And I'll be honest, I've not seen a goalie in many years as fast as he is post to post. But because of how quick he has a tendency to give up goals that are on low on the ice. And I also think he has a little bit of a weakness to his glove hand when he goes down. So there are still spots, and I think teams are finding them. Tampa Bay took advantage of them really well. I thought Montreal did a good job in the game in Montreal the other day finding those same exact spots. And you're not going to sit there and blame every goal on the goalie because sometimes it's a team breakdown and he's the last line of defense and sometimes he's helpless. But at the same time, you can't sit there and say, well, every save the goalie makes is because he's a sensational goaltender either. Sometimes they get lucky. So there's some give and take there. I think he's a good goalie. I think he'll be a good goalie in the NHL for a long period of time, but I'm not ready to anoint him as the next Martin Brodeur just yet.
You're tuned to Sports Radio 1290 in Winnipeg. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, and we're joined by Anthony Sanfilippo of the Delaware County Daily Times.
Anthony, just after we got off the air last Saturday, Jeff Carter signed an 11-year extension with a cap hit of 5.273. It's a fairly reasonable number. What did you think of that contract, and what did the organization think about it?
Well, obviously, my opinion first is it makes a lot of sense. And when you look at it, he's making $5 million this year. They've now locked him up for 11 more years at only a raise of $275,000 per year on the cap. I mean, that to me is really good cap management by a team that has never shown an ability to manage the cap very well. Kudos to Paul Holmgren and his staff for doing that. And of course, Jeff Carter is one of the premier snipers in the NHL. So to have him locked up long term like that is a good thing. And I think that the organization looks at it that way too. They like the nucleus that they have in place here, and they want to try and keep it together as long as they can. They still left themselves an out. I mean, they gave Carter a limited no-trade clause, unlike when they were handing out no-trade clauses like candy in previous years. Carter can veto a trade to 10 teams, but only for over the span of three seasons, beginning in 2012-2013. So the Flyers still have options. If for some reason Carter's not living up to their standard and they want to move him, they can. I think that they really put themselves in a good spot, but I also got to give credit to Jeff Carter, who could have said, you know what, just give me a 1 or 2 year deal. I'll go into unrestricted free agency. I could play for more money somewhere else. He was willing to make a commitment to the city of Philadelphia and to the Flyers. And I think that, he deserves a lot of credit as well. And I think it's a good marriage for the team.
Anthony, we've talked about it on this show before, especially with the Bobby Ryan contract negotiations, was that, in Anaheim, Ryan couldn't really ask for any more than Ryan Getzlaff, was going to make. Did that have a factor at all in terms of Richards being in a 5.75 cap hit? Was there kind of within the negotiations that Carter was never going to get more than that?
No, I don't think that ever really came into play. I did ask Jeff about how much Richards being here for the next 10 years came into play with the length of his contract, and he said it certainly did. But him and Richards are really good friends. They used to live together. Obviously, they've been linked together since the Flyers drafted them, and then World Juniors and with Team Canada, and then winning a Calder Cup. So, I mean, the fact that Richie is here as long as he is made Jeff more willing to sign a longer-term deal like that. But I don't think that the money number ever really got in the way. I think that he was just fine making what he's making. And, Jeff reminds me of one of those guys who can't believe he's being paid what he's paying to play the sport of hockey. And that's why I think he was willing to take a little bit lesser a number, to be honest with you. I mean, he's a kid that grew up in Canada, just playing out in the ponds and everything else like that, and now he's playing it professionally and making ridiculous money to do so. Mm-hmm. The difference between 5.27 and 5.75, I think, to Jeff Carter is it really not even an issue.
I think that's what we call a high class problem to have.
Exactly.
Another one of the young cornerstones of the Flyers they locked up earlier this month, and that's Claude Giroux to a 3-year contract extension, $3.75 million average annual value on the cap hit. What did you think of the Giroux re-signing? I mean, is this a guy that, conceivably is never going to reach free agency if he continues on his current path?
Oh, I think so. It's funny. After the playoffs, the brief playoff run 2 seasons ago when they lost to Pittsburgh in the opening round, and Giroux was easily their best player, I wrote a story comparing Giroux to a young Peter Forsberg, and then he went out last season and had a really substandard year, regular season, and I thought to myself, well, that made me look like an idiot. But then he came back in the playoffs and started to look like that again, and now he's gotten off to the fast start. He is the team's leading scorer. You can see that elite vision that he has. He can play power play, penalty kill, even strength. He's dangerous every time he has the puck. He's one of the best skaters on the team. He plays physical for his size. He really is probably the Flyers' best player. And to see him locked up now for 3 years is a good sign. And as long as he keeps this progression and becomes that elite player, the Flyers will not let him go. And I think that, you know, his next contract will be of the long-term variety, just like Richards and Carter are as well. I think that he's a guy that's going to be part of this nucleus for a long time to come as well.
I agree with you, Anthony. There's nothing not to like about him. Last question here. PK Subban, the comments Mike Richards made this week, made a lot of news in Canada, especially, you know, yeah. TSN all over. Has it made that much of a dent in the Philadelphia landscape, or is it kind of blown out of proportion as far as Mike Richards is concerned?
Well, I think we're not surprised by it because not 2 weeks earlier, after the Flyers lost a bitter game to Pittsburgh, Mike Richards had some nasty things to say about Matt Cook that then resulted in a first period, first shift, 6 seconds into the game fight between Cook and Richards, and then it was over and done with. So we kind of look at that. That's Mike's way of just basically saying, all right, you know, I didn't like the way you played. I didn't like the way we played against you. So the next time we play you, which is coming up on Monday, don't be surprised if I'm not looking to drop the gloves with you right away. That's the way Mike handles it. Now, I know it got kind of blown up a little bit more in Montreal and in Canada. If nothing else, I think Richie's smart enough that he's just leaving that seed with PK, so that when he comes into Philadelphia on Monday, maybe he's looking over his shoulder to see if somebody's going to hit him. Maybe when he's going to get a puck behind the net, you know, he might hear the footsteps of somebody charging at him. I don't think that there's much more to it than that. Mike might try and goad him into a fight early in the game, but if PK doesn't go along with it, Mike's not going to, you know, carry that on throughout the entire game. So I think it's a little bit overblown, but I wouldn't be surprised to see something take place really early in the game Monday night.
Anthony Sanfilippo of the Delaware County Daily Times, thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
No problem, anytime.
Thanks, Anthony.
All right, take care.
But before we go to break, got to pay a little bit of dap to our guy on the other side of the glass there, Michael Remus, operating the R desk. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Go to live chat, illegalcurve.com. Michael Remus is dominating the FanDuel contest. Again, a big winner last week. And if he's able to continue it going, if nobody can beat his record coming on this Saturday night, it's $250 in the Illegal Curve pocket. So this is the expert show. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 11:30 this morning. We're going to do an abbreviated version of six things we learned this week while we try and get a hold of Chip Alexander of the Rally News and Observer. They're just finishing the pregame morning skate there in Carolina, so that's why we're sort of in a little bit of a lull between getting Chip on. Anyways, Richie, the first thing that you learned this week is that the Montreal Canadiens need to be very cautious in offering Andrei Markov a new contract.
People think about Andrei Markov, Drew, as being probably like a 26, 27, or he's 31 years old. And the guy can't stop getting it. You know, he has bad knees now. Let's be honest. He has bad knees, and he keeps getting injured. And a 31-year-old defenseman, he's making $5.75 million. And I realize he's your catalyst on your power play and a puck mover and gets the puck out of your own zone. But PK Subban's moving up. Forget the trash talking. He's a great skater. He can move the puck, too. Once he gets his game under control a little bit, he's going to be a very, very, very good offensive player if he isn't already. You have to take that into account. I mean, how much can you give Markov, and how much is he looking for? I think that's the first thing. If Markov, understandably, is looking for a 2-3-4-year deal, you can consider it up to the age of 35. But anything over, you know, three years, four max, I would be very skeptical if I were Pierre Gauthier. Because with those knees that keep buckling, I mean, what are you going to expect? He's not getting any younger.
No.
And he's not going from 22 to 26 here. He's going from 31 to 35. I'll be very skeptical. And how much are you going to commit? I mean, can you commit right now you have $5.75 million, who essentially is not going to play any games this year. That's a huge portion of the cap. This is not a no-cap system anymore. The Montreal Canadiens with an unlimited budget. This is a cap system with a guy who's injury-prone. And at that age, I mean, for example, you see the risk in Tampa. I was in favor of it. Most people were in favor of it. The Simon Gagné risk. Look at that risk, though. He's played three games.
I know.
Whatever it is.
Well, so you're Pierre Gauthier. What do you give him?
I offer him 2 years at the same dollars he's making right now. And 3 years, I take that on the dollars amount. And I probably don't offer him 4 years. I probably let him go if it's 4 years.
The first thing I learned this week, and this is because, of course, we're missing Ezra today, so I get to make my opinion heard. Not that I don't do that normally, of course. Anyways, the first thing that I learned this week is that the Pittsburgh Penguins defense is, while definitely probably the most underrated defense in the NHL, it might also be the best, the numbers 1 through 5. You have these really household names, but they just do a solid job. You look at their number one, these are sort of their top five defensemen in no particular order. Chris Letang.
He's been tremendous this year.
Been tremendous. Alex Goligoski.
He's Pierre Maguire's new crush.
Well, that's not necessarily a good thing. That means people will get annoyed with him very quickly. Paul Martin, they brought him over as a free agent from New Jersey. Mm-hmm. And boy, is New Jersey missing him right now.
Yeah.
Brooks Orpik. He's been
better this year than last year.
Just a solid sort of stay-at-home defenseman that every team needs. You know, he's not going to do anything flashy, but he's never going to be a detriment to you. And then, their big free agent signing from Phoenix, Zibanejad Mihalik.
That's going to be the key moving forward.
And I mean, he's really off to a slow start this year. So this defense is playing very well. And they're probably the guy they had penciled in as their number one or number two really hasn't even reached his full potential yet.
This is a team, that's why I picked them to make the Stanley Cup against Vancouver, Drew, because I like their defensive pieces more than I did last year, and I think they're going to add something up front, because once Fleury finds his game, which he's already starting to find...
Yeah, he's recovering again.
Very tough match. Now, what we talked about, I think it was last week, Drew, is you're Pittsburgh and you're Washington, right? And you're Pittsburgh and you're playing in the playoffs now, you can put up Mihalik and even Martin or whoever. Mihalik, you can lock Mihalik against Alex Ovechkin, for example. If you're Washington... Who are you locking up on Sidney Crosby? I mean, Jeff Schultz, who I've talked about on the show being overrated. If you saw Jeff Schultz yesterday, he got absolutely undressed by Atlanta's forward.
I saw that.
You don't do that to a number one defenseman or a number two defenseman. So that's the thing. When you talk about the playoffs, and we talked about it last year, Vancouver, Chicago, you talk about matchups because you're playing good teams. Can they match up? Right now, Pittsburgh, as you just mentioned about their defense, they can match up with most teams because of the depth on defense.
And, I mean, of course, injuries always factor in, but if they stay healthy... That's a top five that is, it's going to be tough to mess with come playoff time. Richie, the second thing that you learned this week, the lack of offense supplied by Flames defenseman Jay Bouwmeester is so apparent that it is overwhelming the solid, consistent defensive play he specializes in.
It is true. I mean, he can log big minutes, he can skate, he can do a lot of things, but his puck moving has never been great. And, people thought he'd take the next step and he hasn't. And, you know, for example, bringing in Babchuk is proof in the pudding right there. I mean, they need a shot from the point, but Bouwmeester isn't bringing that offense from the point, and they're adding some offense. I mean, forget about the reasons behind the trade in terms of cap ramifications. One of the main reasons for the trade is because they want to add offense from the point. Bouwmeester, you're paying him $6 million, and you're not getting enough from that. And if you're paying him that much money, Drew, you need to get a return on investment, not only defensively but offensively, because defensively he's just not good enough to be able to compensate the fact that he hasn't provided offensively. $6.6 million cap hit per year for the next few years, but his lack of offense is making his contract, making him a little bit overvalued.
Should it come as a surprise, though? I mean, he was never an offensive dynamo.
He did get better his last year in Florida. He was better offensively, but the question is,
do you think it could be a function of the system? I mean, that's a head coach who demands a defensive play first and foremost. Do you think that's maybe overriding?
Maybe, Drew, but if you watch him on the power play, it just doesn't
still nothing
happen.
There.
It's even his vision and offensively, and it's his confidence offensively. It's just he doesn't have the touch. You have the touch.
Yeah,
he doesn't have the touch.
Doesn't have the soft hands.
Can't teach that.
Yeah,
can't teach it.
Nose for the puck. Other euphemisms like that.
Yep.
Second thing I learned this week is that with Marty Brodeur leaving Thursday night's Devils-Leafs game, he may have just wanted to leave because nobody wanted to watch that game.
Is anybody there?
Well, it's in Toronto, so yeah.
That's right.
But even then, the corporate suits were dressed up as corporate seats. he left the game early with a flare-up of his elbow injury that had kept him out of a few previous games. The Devils are fooling themselves if they think that whatever is ailing Brodeur's elbow can be fixed with a couple days of rest. I have a fear. I mean, I love Marty Brodeur. I mean, he's definitely on the downside of his career, but I have a fear that this could be a chronic injury for the rest of this year.
It could be, and, Drew, aren't we getting to that point of the year where it's close to not being salvageable anymore from New Jersey?
I think so. I mean, they might have one last desperation move, and that's going to be firing John McClain, which wouldn't surprise me if that's what we were talking about next week.
Possible.
Yeah.
But I mean, at what point, remember last year, we talked about it, I think, last week or 2 weeks ago, about, what point, remember last year, Toronto and Carolina, at what point are they done? What point do they have to run, do they have to post such a record that it seems almost implausible that that's possible?
That's right. I mean, and with, you can post the record. There's just so many teams in front of you. That's the real, the big problem.
And the problem is when you're trailing is the possibility of a run is always there for every team, but the possibility of a run without 3-point games is very rare.
That's right.
So, I mean, if you're winning a bunch of games, and if you, for example, if you're the Devils and you go 10-0, you would get 20 points, and the Flyers go 5-5 and lose a couple, you know, lose three games in extra time, and they have 13, you know, you gain 7 points. I mean,
yeah. The Devils are barely over a 250 winning percentage, which mean, and they're 19 games into the season, so about a quarter of the way through the season. You're talking that, you know, realistically, they're going to have to play at a 750-800 clip.
The problem, Drew, is that of their 12 losses.
Yeah, only two of them are overtime losses.
Exactly right.
So they haven't been able to get that bonus third point that the NHL hands out like candy nowadays.
Because you look at San Jose, for example, they've lost five games, and four of them they get the bonus point, right? So
that's right. So I mean, you know, they're 9-5-4. So I mean, you know, it just makes a world. It's a loss, but it's a, you know, not a dramatic loss when you can get that point, because they will add up come the end of the season.
Exactly.
Richard, Evgeny Malkin of the Pittsburgh Penguins has failed to take the next step forward and disappears on the ice for significant stretches at a time.
Seems to lose confidence, Drew, for such. Remember, when Pittsburgh won the Cup 2 years ago against Detroit, when Pittsburgh won the Cup, I mean, I remember Jim Houston's call on Hockey Night in Canada. It was Game 7, and he said, you know, Sidney Crosby and the Pittsburgh Penguins have won the Stanley Cup. And I thought it was a little bit out of place, because I thought, in all honesty, I mean, Crosby got injured in that last game, but in all honesty, I thought that Evgeny Malkin was the better player from beginning to end of the playoffs. And I thought, you know, as much as I love Sidney Crosby and I'm one of his biggest fans, you know, it might have been Malkin who was a bigger factor there. So I thought it was a team win, and if anything, it was Malkin. Since that point, however, Evgeny Malkin hasn't really gotten any better to me, and Sidney Crosby has improved in so many aspects of this game that Malkin is now, used to be a three-horse race. Ovechkin, Malkin, Crosby. Now Malkin isn't even in the Crosby-Ovechkin conversation, and has almost certainly been passed by Steven Stamkos. And there's been a bit of a regression, or maybe not a regression, no progression.
Yeah.
And you know, he holds onto the puck for too long. I realize he doesn't have the line mates necessary to make the next step. And maybe when Jordan Staal comes back, he's on the ice yesterday, Jordan Staal comes back and plays on a line with him, maybe we'll see some better play. But Sidney Crosby doesn't play with those line mates, and he's been producing, so.
It really. I mean, I watched that Vancouver Pittsburgh game on Wednesday night, and I mean, you can't help but notice Crosby. He's everywhere.
Every play, every shift on the ice is a scoring. No exaggeration. Yeah. Every time he's on the ice, is a scoring chance. Nobody on Vancouver, by the way, in that game, and they have good defensive defensemen. Nobody could handle him. He was making Danny Hamhuis look bad.
Well, he's a beast. I mean, there's no conversation as far as I'm concerned between him and Ovechkin. If you're talking about the ice, the entire length of the ice, there's no conversation there.
I mean, no conversation, period. I mean, the way exactly the situations that he's able to play in, and the way he's able to dominate games, not just with his scoring.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a surprise. We're not breaking any news here that Sidney Crosby's good, but he's got such a commitment to the game and to improving every facet of his game. You know, if you want to nitpick, you know, you could have nitpicked a little bit of his game last season. He's gone out in the offseason. His point has been to improve that area. And that's the mark of a champion. That's a guy who, you know, he tasted the Stanley Cup last year, or not, sorry, 2 years ago, and he wants it back and he doesn't want to let it go. You can see that. I mean,
I had a good story about Crosby. I actually don't know if this is true, but apparently the story was that like 2 years or 3 years ago was on New Year's, and everybody was out there having a good time. It was just before midnight. And everybody was celebrating, and they were having drinks, and, you know, like most people do. And apparently Crosby checks out right before that, and he goes, and people are asking him, well, where are you going? He goes, you got to wake up early in the morning to train tomorrow morning. Can't take a day off here.
That's what you want to see. You want to see that. I mean, whether or not it's, I mean, I'm sure there's an element of truth to it.
Yeah, but I think what I'm trying to get
that's
at
what
is,
you want to see.
Is a work ethic. We've talked with Shelley Anderson of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette about this. It's a willingness to get better, and it just continues and continues, and he always finds parts of his games to get better, and I wonder if Malkin's doing the same.
We're going to end six things this week with on a sad note, of course. The Ottawa Senators knew that they were going to lose Wednesday night's game against the Carolina Hurricanes based on, you know, and they did so, but they're going to be the better team in the end. Wednesday afternoon, Wednesday morning, the Senators left Ottawa late because they attended a memorial service for the young daughter of assistant coach Luke Richardson. Daron Richardson took her own life earlier in the week. I think it was Friday night she committed suicide, and then she passed away on Saturday. And the Ottawa Senators boycotted, or they didn't boycott, but they put the that issue ahead of everything else. And they said, we're going to lose Wednesday. They didn't get into Carolina until late on Wednesday. They played that game that night. They had no life in them. They were at this memorial service. They will be a better team long term for having banded together, done the right thing, attended this memorial service for a young girl. And this is going to benefit them long term as a team when it comes later on in the year. They'll be a closer knit, a tighter knit group. Of course, we extend our condolences to the Richardson family. Just a tragedy, and there's really nothing else that we can add about that. Just our condolences, and there's always other options, folks. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. One final segment on this Saturday morning. We're still going to try and get a hold of Chip Alexander of the Rally News and Observer, but until we do that, we're going to go straight into everybody's favorite segment. That is Rapid Fire. Richard, starting off for Rapid Fire this week, the Western Conference has been dominating the Eastern Conference so far this year, posting a record of 40 wins, 19 losses, and 9 ties through Tuesday night's games. The Central Division alone is 13-3-2, and Detroit, the class, one of the class teams in the West, has yet to play anyone in the East. Will these stats ultimately mean anything, or come the Stanley Cup championship, will the two conference champions be so close together talent-wise that it's just going to be, these are just meaningless stats?
The latter there, Drew. I mean, I think the biggest thing, and this is obviously a small sample size, it's been a short season so far, we're 20 games into the season, 15 to 20 games into the season. I think the difference, though, Drew, is that the bad teams in the Western Conference are a lot better than the bad teams in the Eastern Conference. I mean, you have your Floridas and your Carolinas and teams like that and the Islanders, for example. And then in the Western Conference, I mean, the third worst team in the Western Conference right now is the Nashville Predators, Drew. The second worst team in the Western Conference is the Calgary Flames. I mean, those teams wouldn't be the last place teams in the Eastern Conference. And I realize it's early, but the Chicago Blackhawks are 11th in the Western Conference right now. And the San Jose Sharks are 10, for example. So the bad teams in the West are better than the bad teams in the East. And I think that, over the course of the season, would
manifest itself. Yeah. But come the finals, it won't matter because there won't be that big of a talent gap.
The Eastern Conference can be the worst team in the world, but if the team in the Eastern Conference was just as good as the team in the Western Conference, it wouldn't matter.
Right. Moving to Atlanta, the Atlanta Thrashers named off-season acquisition Andrew Ladd their captain on Thursday. Ladd, a two-time Stanley Cup winner with Carolina in 2006 and Chicago last season, leads the Thrashers with 18 points in 19 games. Is Andrew Ladd the right choice to steer the good ship Thrasher for the foreseeable future?
Excuse me, Drew. 100%. The guy plays any role he can. He's a big guy. He was traded up from Carolina, Chicago for Tuomo Ruutu. He's big. He's strong. He's a good leader. He can play in any situations. He can play third line. He can play first line, which he's asked to now. He can play power play. He's got good hands. He's good along the boards. He's won 2 Stanley Cups at a young age, Drew. I mean, think about that. The Stanley Cups that he's won with 2 different teams at such a young age. I mean, I love Andrew Ladd's game. I love his character. I think he's the type of leader that the team needs. And I think Rick Dudley knew a lot of, obviously working with him in Chicago, knew a lot about the player. And when he brought him in, I mean, he's 24 years old and has 2 cups. I love this pick.
You think he's been around for so much longer.
He's got that thick beard since he was like 17.
Yeah, well, but he won, on the World Junior teams. He won his first cup when he was 20 with the Hurricanes. I mean, was that his rookie season?
I believe so.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is a guy who knows how to win. The Thrashers are a franchise that doesn't know how to win, so you can't have too many of those guys. Right. Between him and Byfuglien, I think they really might be changing the attitude in the Thrashers dressing room. They named Byfuglien one of the assistant captains.
And between Rick Dudley and Craig Ramsey.
Absolutely. Becoming a classier organization, which is key. The Edmonton Oilers are 2-6-2 in their last 10 games and are now 4-10-3 on the season. Short and sweet, is this the most uncompetitive team in the NHL in the last number of years?
They've been outscored by 30 goals this year, Drew. We're 18 games into the season.
We're going to be talking about their goaltending issues in the next question.
30 goals. They've allowed 75 goals, Drew. Nobody in the Western Conference has allowed more than 66 aside from that. You look at the Eastern Conference, I mean, Atlanta's had 69, but Atlanta's played 2 more games in Edmonton. This is a team that has a terrible defense, and the problem is when you have offensive players, when you have young players take a while to produce offensively, but they take even longer generally to produce, to be able to understand the defensive games and the defensive responsibilities. So when you have your top 2 defensive pairing is Whitney and Gilbert, who are pretty good offensively, but aren't great defensively, and then your second pairing and third pairing are guys like Vandermeer and obviously Smeed. I don't mind Laszlo Smeed.
But he's out right now after Sean Avery knocked him out.
Curtis Foster, Theo Peckham, you're addressing guys who shouldn't be regularly playing in the National Hockey League. And then you have goaltending, which obviously Habibulin's now injured. We'll talk about that in a second. But, I mean, even the help he has, I mean, he hasn't been great and he hasn't had good help. So the team as a whole is awful. And you know what? If you're an Edmonton fan, it might be tough to play, go through this year and be outscored by 200 goals, which isn't like going to happen, but they're on pace for crazy amounts. You want a good high pick. We talked about that before the season. You'd rather be bad and get a good pick than be okay and get a 12th pick.
Because once they get that high pick again with the core that they have there, it won't take long. Hall, Eberle, they'll be back. They'll be back in the glory days in the Oilers in no time. Much like the Blackhawks did. It's the same way.
Easy to be a good GM when your team sucks for 4 years.
That's right. When you have to decide between the first overall pick and the second overall pick, it's an easy decision.
Pittsburgh has four guys from the top five.
Yeah. Sticking with the Edmonton Oilers, and, well, you know, we're sorry for the piling on, but c'est la vie. Oilers goaltender Nikolai Habibulin has been placed on IR with a groin injury. This is after he missed the majority of last season with a back injury. When healthy this year, he has posted a goals against average of 4.07 and a save percentage of 8.79. He makes $3.75 million per year for the next 2 years as well.
And he's over 35 and signed that contract when he was past 35, so all those years will count against the cap, even if he gets cut,
doesn't matter.
It's another DUI.
They're paying him he has to go to jail for longer than, you know, there's lots of problems. Is he the worst free agent signing in the post-lockout NHL?
If you make that argument, I mean, the rumor was that he wasn't offered anything other than a two-year deal by every other club, and then Edmonton came in and offered him 4 years. That's the whole thing that I have an issue with, Drew. It's that, you know, the Edmonton plan, and you watch the Oil Change, which is a good documentary, and they talk about some kind of, like, grand plan as if they had a plan. You didn't have a plan. You hired Pat Quinn, a veteran coach, and then you signed Nikolai Habibulin to a 4-year deal. Your plan wasn't to tank. You just tanked.
It just sort of happened that all of a sudden, then Pat Quinn was expendable because he's not the right coach for that team.
That's right.
Nikolai is drunk, so he's not the right
goalie
for that team.
4 years for a goalie over 35 who's had injury issues in the past.
It didn't make sense when they signed him to it.
He wasn't even that good in Chicago. I mean, he played all right in Chicago the year before they
had
him.
But he was injury prone in Chicago. I mean, it's not like he was a picture of health who was dominant in Chicago.
3.75. And he had Rolson willing to be there for a couple of years at less dollars. Come on. Come on.
Right now, Rolson's for the far better goaltender right now on probably just as bad a team.
You could argue it's the worst signing since the lockout.
Hey, so you can hang your hat on that, Oilers fans. As the Calgary Flames continue to struggle, boy, it's bad to be in Alberta today, apparently.
Oh, yeah.
As the Calgary Flames continue to struggle, the rumors surrounding the future of Jerome Iginla grow louder and louder. Two-part question. A, will he be traded this season? And B, where is he being traded to? If.
Good question. I think I'll answer the second one first. I think he's going to be traded to LA. I think the rumors there are true. I think LA would want a player like him. They tried to get Kovalchuk. They've tried to get offensive players before. He would fit in really well with their system, you know, in terms, especially a Kopitar guy who's really good along the boards, really strong with the puck. And Kopitar is still more of a passer than a shooter, so I think that actually they'd complement each other very well. However, I've said it before, look at the roster that they have. I mean, that's the thing, Drew. I don't know how you trade him, because you look at the roster that they have and you have Stajan signed for the next few years, Bork and then Hagman for next year, and Kotalik and Jokinen. I mean, I guess
they can't tank. I mean, if you trade him, you're saying that you're going to tank, but you can't tank because you have all these bad contracts.
That's the point. So, I mean, which way are you going to go? At the end of the day, if you're able to trade Iginla and get really good young players, then you have to consider it, I think. In 2 years, they really have, you know, going to after 2011, 2012, they have a lot of UFAs. But why sign Stajan to the contract? My issue is, where's the vision?
Okay, final question, rapid fire, real quick. Another week, another series of suspensions. Olli Jokinen suspended 3 games for a cross-check to the face of Wojtek Wolski of the Coyotes. Tampa Bay Lightning forward Matias Rotola suspended 2 games for a hit from behind, an elbow to the head, and a forward Matt Molson of the Islanders. Do you agree with the lengths of the suspensions?
Jokinen's, I thought, was a little bit more accidental. I thought that should have been less. I thought maybe 2 or 1. A stick, it just rode up the kind of shoulders, and he missed it. He missed the shoulders there. The Rotola hit from behind was a jump into a guy standing against the boards, exactly how people break their necks. I thought he should have got 5 games. That's why I don't understand this again. The NHL, as we talked about this, the NHL does not police hitting from behind, and they continue to let it happen, and it leaks down to all levels of hockey. And young players do it because they see it in the NHL, and they see it that it's not policed.
Let's wrap up the show with cheers and jeers. Richard, your cheer or your jeer this week?
Well, some or no, but I'm going to give my cheer, Drew, to Pat Burns. And my cheer to Pat Burns is the fact that, you know, in this day and age when coaches are asked to remain stoic and coaches are asked to not really express anything and stay calm, he coached with his heart on his sleeve.
Yeah.
And I like that style. And I think we've kind of overcorrected in all sports with coaches not showing any emotion. He was who he was. He would go nuts when he did. He was calm when he had to be. wearing your emotions on your sleeve, it makes the game more exciting. You become more of an actual person. And I thought that that was one of Pat Byrne's greatest traits, and that's probably one of the things I'll miss most about him.
That's very well said. I'm going to sort of do a combination cheer and jeer, if I'm so permitted to do so. I'm going to jeer the Toronto media. A couple guys in the Toronto media, Andrew Crystal on The Fan, Bruce Daubigan in the Globe and Mail wrote about it. They were wondering whether Brian Burke is getting sort of a free pass from the media because of his son tragically passing away in the car accident last year. At the same time, in today's Globe and Mail, Brian Burke's daughter responded to that with a very well articulated, well written letter, saying, my dad is grieving the way that he's grieving. It takes a lot of chutzpah for anybody in the media to talk about somebody about how they're grieving when they lose a son. I read it and I'm like,
Howard Berger started it all too.
That's right. Howard Berger started it all. I'm just reading it and I'm thinking to myself, guys, don't bring up his son. His son passed away tragic. His son, don't bring it up. Just don't deal with the issue at all, period. Just move on. If you're going to start the sentence with it, stop. Think about it. Move on to something differently. If you want to criticize Burke, go ahead. Criticize him. Don't bring up his son. The guy is grieving however he feels best to grieve. It's uncouth. It's uncalled for. And just because you have a microphone in front of you doesn't mean you should bring it up. And I think they're getting a jeer, but I'm giving a cheer to Brian Burke's daughter for coming to really just writing a good letter saying, let my dad be my dad. Anyways, that's it for this Saturday morning here on Sports Radio 1290. If you want to get more of the Illegal Curve radio show and the Illegal Curve hockey show, you can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on our website, illegalcurve.com, and you can follow us, of course, on iTunes in case you missed any of the show and you want to download it onto your local iPod or whatever. We'll be back next Saturday.
You're fighting with Facebook, Drew.
I'm sorry. We're on Facebook, illegalcurve.com as well. A big thank you, of course, to Anthony Sanfilippo of the Delaware County Daily Times for joining us this week. A big thank you to Tim here behind the glass. A big thank you to Michael Remus operating the R Desk, the live chat, the Twitter, the Facebook, everything else like that.
We have one Ezzy back next week.
Ezzy will be back next week. Stay tuned to Sports Radio 1290 for the best in sports programming. And of course, Live at Wayne Gretzky is coming up at 3 o'clock this afternoon on this fine radio station. And until next Saturday morning, Puck Drop is at 6 p.m.